and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, September 4th, 2023. The UN's World Food Programme says over 20 million people are facing hunger in Sudan due to the ongoing conflict.
So things in Port Sudan are a bit challenging. You have a lot of influx of people displaced who are trying to leave the country from Port Sudan.
And a manager of an airline has been sentenced in South Sudan's capital, Juba, for disobeying court orders.
We are here to execute the judicial sentence, judicial decrees and orders, which come from the competent court, having the logo of the court and the stamp and the signature of the judge. Finish.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, visited South Sudan today to discuss the conflict in Sudan with President Salva Kiir. Burhan and the leader of the paramilitary rapid support forces, commanded by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, disagreed in April, and serious fighting ensued between RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces. In Khartoum and other parts of Sudan, Burhan left the military command in Khartoum last month and relocated to the Red Sea city of Port Sudan. For more updates on Burhan's visit, we go live to our editor in Juba, Charlton Doki. Charlton.
Yes, John. Indeed, this morning, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan visited Juba. It was roughly around 9 o'clock, and he was received at the airport by President Salva Kiir and some of his ministers. And unlike other visits by...
Yeah, how big
unlike
was...
Unlike other visits...
Go ahead.
Yes, I was saying, unlike other visits by other leaders, this one was kept secret. So reporters were neither at the airport or even at the president's office where the two had their meeting.
And how big was Burhan's delegation? You know, they normally travel with a lot of people. How big was his delegation?
That's right. I am not sure of the exact number of people, but there was a delegation definitely he traveled with. And notably was the acting foreign affairs minister. His name is Ali Al-Sadiq. And also General Ahmed Ibrahim Mufadil, who is the head of the intelligence authority in Sudan. And a number of other military officers were also part of this delegation.
And since this was a closed-door meeting, any leaks?
We understand that from some remarks made by Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, Al-Sadiq, the main reason for the meeting was that the Sudanese officials would like South Sudan, and in particular President Salva Kiir, to mediate in the ongoing conflict. And from information we were reading on the Facebook page of the president's office, we understand that Al-Sadiq said some people in Sudan believe that President Kiir is better suited to mediate in this conflict because, according to him, South Sudanese authorities, including President Kiir, know the problems and needs of the people in Sudan.
And apart from, you know, his visit in Juba, could you bring us up to speed, you know, on the number of refugees who are coming from Sudan? I understand there is a camp outside Juba. How big is this camp?
Yes, that's right. There is a camp outside Juba, which has thousands. I'm not sure of the exact number, but it has thousands of refugees. But we also know that other refugees are not in Juba. They are in other parts of the country, for example, in Unity State, and also in northern state where officials have created a refugee camp over there. So the refugees are in their thousands, but they are not stationed in one place. They are in various parts of the country. A majority of them are in the northern states. That's Unity, Upper Nile, and also northern Baragaza state.
And
but from the UN, UN officials here have been saying that they anticipate that more refugees will be arriving if the conflict is not resolved. They anticipate that by the end of the year, there will be more refugees coming into South Sudan.
Thank you very much. That's Charlton Doki, our editor in Juba, speaking to us live about the visit of General Burhan to South Sudan today, where he met with President Salva Kiir. According to the latest report from the World Food Programme, up to 2.5 million additional people in Sudan are expected to slip into hunger in the coming months because of ongoing violence. WFP is also extremely concerned that the conflict could undermine the current planting season as farmers face insecurity and struggle to cope with soaring prices of fertilizers and seeds. Lenny Kinsley is the communication officer for World Food Programme. She tells my colleague Yahya Swihub that over 20 million people in Sudan who are currently facing hunger do not know where their next meal is coming from.
So things in Port Sudan are a bit challenging. You have a lot of influx of people displaced who are trying to leave the country from Port Sudan, and we're seeing that all across the country. We now have some hubs, operational hubs, set up in Kosi, which is in Wat Nau State, in Wad Madani, Jazeera State, to try to support as many people who have fled the intense fighting in Khartoum as possible. We're seeing people fleeing by the day, and we're seeing the fighting escalate and spread across the country, which is extremely concerning because humanitarian needs and food insecurity in Sudan were already at record levels before the conflict started in April. And now, at the beginning of the conflict, we were warning that additional 2.5 million people could be pushed into hunger. And a recent assessment that was issued just a few weeks ago at the beginning of this month showed that it's actually even worse than that. So right now we're looking at over 20 million people who do not know where their next meal would come from, who are facing hunger. And what is most concerning about this is that around 6.3 million people, it's 12.5% of the population, are just one step away from famine. And that is emergency levels of hunger. People are selling off what they own just to afford a meal a day. And we're seeing this particularly in the Darfur, but also in the Kordofans and parts of Red Sea State. So,
and Lini, also WFP is assisting newly arrived refugees with emergency food assistance in neighboring countries. How is that going along?
Yes, yeah, so we're also providing assistance on the border in Chad, as well as in Egypt and Rank in South Sudan. And it's extremely challenging because these countries were already, at least their operations in those countries, were already facing funding deficits before. And so it's a challenge. In Egypt, luckily for Sudan refugees, we've started up a cash assistance program and also providing different kinds of food like date bars in Chad. Also some cotton ready-to-eat meals on the border. But with the number of refugees and Sudanese who are going into neighboring countries.
And now you say 2.5 million additional people in Sudan are expected to slip into hunger. This thing is getting bigger by the day. Can WFP handle this?
So basically what we had been warning about at the beginning of the crisis has now been confirmed. And yes, it is growing and it has been growing year on year. For the past several years, and this has been an extremely concerning trend, mostly due to economic downturn, intercommunal conflict, which existed before this broader nationwide conflict, but also climate shocks, droughts, and floods. So there are a lot of factors that are playing into why food insecurity is getting so high. And to your question, whether or more organizations should be involved, it's not necessarily a matter of more organizations, but the international community and donors, one, need to step up to provide WFP and other organizations that are working on the humanitarian response in Sudan with additional funding to be able to do so. But it is also very, very much about having the ability to be able to deliver and that's tied to insecurity and access constraints. And so much more needs to be done in this regard to urge all parties to the conflict to facilitate the delivery of humanitarian assistance, to protect humanitarian workers, assistance, assets, premises, and offices. And this is where the international community could push further and be more aligned in order to support humanitarian efforts in the country that are going on, so that WFP can scale up and reach as many of the people as possible who need this assistance.
That's Lenny Kinsley, Communications Officer for the World Food Programme in Sudan. She was speaking to my colleague Yehes Wihu. A court in South Sudan's capital, Juba, has arrested the managing director of an airline for failing to pay compensation to families of passengers who died in a 2021 plane crash in Jonglei State. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Bor.
10 people, including 8 passengers and 2 crew members, perished when flight HK-4274 belonging to South Supreme Airlines crashed at Piri Airstrip in Urur County in March 2021. The families of the victims filed a case against the airline's management for negligence, and the court ordered South Supreme Airlines to pay $100,000 each to the families of the 10 passengers who died during the plane crash. In a letter dated August 31, 2023, presiding judge James Ladu Jada of the Malakia High Court in Juba ordered the police to arrest the managing director of Supreme Airline, Ayi Duang Ayi, after failing to compensate the victims of the plane crash. Major General Daniel Justins, spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, says the police implemented the court order with immediate effect.
Yes, but you see, we have a unit of police attached to the court for implementation of court orders. It was that police who implemented it. People were yesterday talking of police station, but it was from the court to the prison. If he pays the money, then the police will bring the case to the court that the jail person have paid the money. Immediately, the court will order his release.
Major General Redento Tangun is the spokesperson of the South Sudan National Prison Service.
We are here to execute the judicial sentence, judicial decrees and orders, which come from the competent court, having the logo of the court and the stamp and the signature of the judge. Finish. If Ayi is committed according to what I say, then he must be in the prison.
Muinluak Alor Kual is the lawyer representing the families of the victims. He says Ayi was locked up in Juba Central Prison on Thursday.
Although we were not satisfied with that, the families of the victims told us as lawyers that they were tired and that they would want to put an end to this. So they say, please, let the court implement this. So we opened an exclusive file asking for that compensation. And the airline, well, was not coming forward in doing their obligation. We asked for the detention of the head of the management of that airline pending the settlement of the compensation.
Kual says if South Supreme Airline fails to pay the compensation, the victims' lawyers will ask the court to freeze the company's assets.
Whether they are vehicles, whether they are immovable assets of the airline company. We are looking for their assets. If we get their assets, we will also seize them and see if they would cover the amount that is supposed to be paid by them or not. But in the meantime, Ayi would remain there. There is no substitution. Would remain there, and when we gather assets that would bring that value, then yeah, we'll get back to the court again, and perhaps that's the time we can release.
Repeated calls to Ayi Duang for comments on the story went unanswered, and the company's lawyer Jose Manuel declined to comment on Ayi's sentencing. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Coming up, Community leaders in Juba County blame the South Sudan Army for committing crimes. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Local leaders in Lobonok village of Juba County are calling for the withdrawal of South Sudan People's Defense Forces stationed in the area. The leaders say a soldier belonging to the National Army allegedly shot and injured a paramount chief in the area. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The local leaders from Lobonok village are calling on the South Sudan government to replace the National Army stationed in the area. Noel Matayo, a leader of an association of young people in Lobonok, says Chief Matthew Kenyijale was almost killed by a member of the South Sudan National Army last week. He says the latest shooting is part of several other abuses committed by some members of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, stationed at Pagera Village and other parts of Lobonok. Matayo says another SSPDF soldier shot and killed a civilian last month. He also says another soldier shot and injured a local chief in Karpeto Boma.
The people of Lobonok believes that any armed forces, like in any civilized and democratic country, is meant to protect the lives and properties of its citizens. Yet here, in the Republic of South Sudan, and Lobonok, Payami particularly, the armed forces has turned to be a source of destruction of lives, properties, and massive displacement of the civil population.
Tartisio Lado, executive chief of Tombor in Lobonok, says the news of the shooting of Chief Jale sent chilling message to residents of Lobonok.
Until now, I have pressure. Since Tuesday at 7 p.m., I didn't sleep well up to now. You, the media people, we are calling on you to tell these things so that you understand. If the chiefs are not there in Lobonok, there would be nobody who can stay there.
The paramount chief was shot in the home village of Jemiswani Iga, the South Sudan's vice president for economic cluster. Nelson Leju is the deputy spokesperson in the office of the vice president. He says Chief Jale is coping up with medication and the soldier who shot him is still at large.
One of the SSDF deployed there, and he came to the residence of the chief and asked for food. And I think the food was not given to him because actually that time is already late. All the food is finished. That is why I was being told that the food is not there. Then he started shooting. In fact, the security itself has been taken, and soon the culprit will be investigated because he's going to be arrested. It's someone who is well known there in the village.
Derek Direction, the spokesperson in the office of the governor of Central Equatoria State, told the VOA that Governor Emmanuel Adel says the state condemns the incident.
The area where this incident happened, the leadership has already given measures to the security apparatus to make sure that security is beefed up at that particular area, and the area is actually being put into under serious monitoring.
Najat Sule, a women's leader in Lobonok, says SSPDF soldiers have committed several crimes in the area.
These things that we are explaining to you now are things that happened just these recent months. They are not for the past years. This month, there were two women who were raped. Their husbands were tied and their wives were raped while they were watching. Where has this happened, if not in Lobonok? A place where there is a vice president for a whole nation.
Major General Lulroy Kwong, the SSPDF spokesperson, says military officials are waiting for more information about the alleged abuses in Lobonok village.
What basically is that, yes, the report came to our attention. The area commander went to his area of deployment, and as soon as he's done with the preliminary investigation, he will share the report with us, and that's when the headquarters will be in a position to respond.
The community leaders from Lobonok have accused some members of the South Sudan Army of looting solar panels. The leaders say they reported the incidents to authorities in Juba. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Harare, where Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was sworn in to a second term in office today, despite opposition calls for new elections. The opposition has alleged there was vote rigging and voter intimidation last month's national polls. Reporter Josiah Zenivashi in Harare spoke with people in the capital about the inauguration.
A few kilometers from the arena where Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa took the oath for a second term, people in Harare's central business district are going about their business. Some civil society groups and opposition parties say the elections last month were a sham. Building up to the inauguration, critics warned the opposition might try to stop or delay the inauguration by approaching the courts. However, there has been no court filing. Watson Jere is a vendor in Harare's central business district.
So those people in Harare, they are complaining. They are saying that the president, he rigged the elections. The people, they are not happy. Because if you can see, those supporters, they get the supporters from out, from rural areas. The bus is for free. They mustn't not do that. The people must come on their own.
Tendai Miko is a Harare resident who attended the inauguration.
We are in full support of his infrastructure development, which is a key fundamental area in any economic development growth.
William Farai also approves of Mnangagwa, who leads the ZANU-PF, which has dominated Zimbabwe's government since independence in 1980.
I, as a Zimbabwean, I don't have a query with that, because what I know and what I remember, I was born in this ruling party. My grandfather, grandmother, and great-grandfather, they were in the fight. They fought for this land for us to be free like we are today. So, as my side, as an individual, I don't have a problem with that. Let him be. The inauguration is going on.
The Zimbabwe Election Commission declared Mnangagwa the winner of the August 23 election with about 53% of the vote. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, September 4th, 2023. We now leave you with Mawa and the song Beledi.
Lisa magi rudu akunde.
We have been listening to Mawa and the song Beledi. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adrius Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The decision by the transition government in Mali to close the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, or MINUSMA, has already triggered renewed violence on the ground, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We are alarmed by a resumption of hostilities in northern Mali, including by violations of the ceasefire during the August 11th and 12th clashes at the Bear Camp, and by subsequent attacks on a MINUSMA convoy on August 13th. Additionally, MINUSMA's withdrawal limits the ability of the international community to protect civilians from the predations of Wagner, whose activities contribute to greater insecurity in the country.
Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield expressed her gratitude to the men and women of MINUSMA and to the troop and police contributing countries for their commitment to peace in Mali in the face of grave danger.
And we strongly condemn senseless attacks on peacekeepers, which threaten to reverse years of progress toward peace and stability and undo so many of the remarkable gains made by the UN and Malians.
The Malian people deserve peace, declared Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield. And further instability would open the doors to JNIM and ISIS Sahel to spread their access and influence. It would be a recipe for disaster. The Malian transition government and signatory armed groups, along with the UN and the international community, must demonstrate a revitalized commitment to the Algiers Accord, urged Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield.
This agreement continues to represent the best opportunity for lasting peace and stability in Mali, plain and simple. To that end, we call on all signatory parties to immediately renew their cooperation with the international mediation.
The United States urges the parties to settle their disputes through dialogue and engage with MINUSMA on an agreement for the safe and peaceful transfer of its camps and bases to the Malian authorities. As the situation grows increasingly volatile, these transfers must prioritize the safety and security of peacekeepers. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield reminded the transition authorities that the Status of Forces Agreement and its provision ensuring MINUSMA's freedom of movement throughout Mali remains in full effect until the mission's final element has departed, which will extend beyond December 31st. Mali's leaders have an opportunity to build on MINUSMA's legacy and recommit to dialogue to settle differences rather than violence. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield urged all Malians to choose the path of peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.